I try to make it just super meat and potatoes, like Vistaprint, Canva, Squarespace, like
yeah.
all the just get out there and do it kind of pep talk. You know, I was joking around the original.
And you're speaking mostly with other
like financial planners and insurance agents, yeah,
advisors.
No, because Fineo, the startup I'm helping, is aim more at financial planners for now.
Yeah,
doing term critical illness and disability in one platform.
Yeah.
So it was more or less their community. I actually didn't recognize anybody who logged in, which was kind of interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought it would have been like my buddies, which was funny. But then I was like, oh shoot, this is a whole just independent people. So I needed to.
What was the process of getting, you know, a webinar off the ground? I've never really done that.
Yeah, neither did I. Fineo's done a handful with good, solid professional advisors, and I'm helping them get licensed in the U.S.
Hmm.
And they just asked me if I'd do one.
Wow.
Kind of last minute, too. I don't think it should have been called a webinar. I think it should have been called a live stream, just from like a marketing and zeitgeist and what people want to pay attention to these days.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Is what type of insurance do you mostly focus on?
So the agency I'm working at day to day is really good at employee benefits, and that's where we win business. But I help out with the property casualty and kind of learning as we go and rounding out accounts there.
And who are your clients?
Mainly machine shops, blue collar, and then some, you know, white collar, preschools, doctor's offices, you know, kind of a hodgepodge. But the thing we kind of hunt is the blue collar, where technology's not really at play yet, and we bring in these tools for free, more or less. So on both fronts, it's digitizing stuff that's been PDF driven largely. Yeah.
Hmm.
And just trying to be a little ahead of the curve on tech.
Yeah. And got it. Understood. And how long have you been doing that?
Been licensed actually since 2014. I originally got into insure office spaces and buildings, so I know where, you know, moves are going to be at. Used to be a commercial relocation salesman.
Yeah.
Totally random. But that's everybody in insurance. Nobody means to get into it.
Really?
Yeah. I've met one person who meant to get an insurance. He's from India. His name's Rahul. And his mom got sick, and he was just amazed that they paid not a lot of money, and the insurance company paid a lot, and he wondered how it all worked.
Hmm.
So that's the only person I've ever actually seen mean to get into insurance. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you were mentioning starting a group,
mm-hmm.
and what was that like? And maybe you can even talk about your live stream as well.
Yeah. So I've been running Broker Brews for about 2.5 years now. And initially I went to Lisa Viejo Insurance Meetup. And after one meeting, the lady emailed me and said, hey, can you take this over? And I was like, lady, I'm about to like lose my day job. I'm not doing a very good job at it. I'm not sure I should be taking over a meetup about insurance. A week later, I got an email from meetup.com saying this group's going to fold unless you take it over.
Mm.
And so we did. And we tried to run an InsurTech one in Orange County. Nobody showed up for 6 months. We flipped it to Broker Brews, kind of changed up the branding, and a lot of commercial, you know, sales folks started coming out, business to business sales folks.
Mm.
And then the move we did a couple months later, a year later, was to start broadcasting on Eventbrite, you know, Ink Cards, you know, one of our local startups, and that brought more people out. And I was foolish. I should have hit up Lee for advice he offered early on at one of the OC Tech Happy Hour events, and I never chased him down for coffee, but he's always open and willing to kind of helped me along as I was figuring out my, you know, tribe building process.
Mm.
So,
and recently today you did an online and a virtual event.
Yeah.
How did that come to be? Because I'm fascinated with that right now.
It was actually kind of stressful. I've been doing a InsurTech podcast about every other week for about a year, but to build out a deck and to actually share knowledge, and I try to make it as grounded and as useful as possible. I try to go behind the layer. The joke was going to be how to be Broker Brett for less than $100 a month was the original title, but I realized not everybody knew who I was ahead of time. Honestly, kind of felt like getting ready for school, you know, but I encouraged the questions. I had one of my teammates at Fineo, Alicia, kind of told her to chime in, you know, used to the back and forth. I wasn't planning on lecturing for 30 minutes, but it was super fun and connected with a bunch of Canadian financial advisors, which that's where the startup's out of.
Mm.
And I'm helping them come to the US.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So, yeah, my day to day right now is split time between, you know, a local agency that's really good at benefits, and then helping a tech startup from Toronto come this direction. So, you know, pretty busy, always interesting right now. Yeah.
Where are you from?
Edge of LA County. Could see downtown LA from our little tiny house. And then Placentia with my folks. And then now Costa Mesa with my wife. And get spoiled by that marine layer. I don't know if I can go back. You know,
any kids?
Keep creeping towards water. No. And that's why I get to do all the crazy startup stuff right now. My wife's in grad school for physical therapy. So take advantage of the simplicity right now. Although I think children will be the greatest startup project I'll ever be involved in. But today, yeah, not on the table. So
we can go a couple of directions here. And I think we can talk more about community building, mm-hmm. and what you see the future of that being. Or we can talk more about insurance. We can talk more about startups. What do you feel is right?
I think because community building is what you've been sort of known for, it might be a fun thing to dive into. Because to a lot of people, I feel like it's this intimidating thing. And I've always felt that it takes just a little bit more effort to lead something with all sorts of cool upside, rather than to participate well. And if you're just going to barely be around, it's almost not worth it. You know, you can go collect a card, but people have to know you for half a year to a year to, I think, build, you know, an effective, trusting business-to-business relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, more than happy to hit all three. I joked around ahead of time. The calendar's clear for the rest of the day, so you know, yours, you know, whatever questions make sense, man.
Okay, be careful what you wish for,
right?
Brad, because this is an area that I'm really, really curious about, and considering myself like a researcher in this area. And you mentioned it takes like 6 months to a year to really develop kind of like a trusted relationship with somebody. And as I've now compounded that over several years,
mm-hmm.
there's people I can just call them 10 minutes ahead of time and go walk into their office,
yeah.
and like just hang out for the afternoon. And the more of those that you build up, the larger your world kind of expands as you give more and lead more and sort of lead the pack versus following and holding back and being more, you know, kind of like stingy with life.
Mm-hmm.
Your world kind of gets smaller. Have you noticed that?
Well, I think it's an abundance versus a closed mindset. And candidly, it's easy for us. It's Orange County, it's LA. There's enough money and opportunity around here. And then also, you don't necessarily have to like lead and be up front, because not everybody can have the mic. But if you go in with a heart of contributing and helping, and when you meet people, say, hey, like, you know, oh, you're leading tech at a company, I have a CTO roundtable we can invite you to. But if you look to give, like all the cliche networking groups you gain, you know. And I've learned this for a long time. Like, I had friends I grew up with who had a lot more money than I did. But I'd always make a point to at least bring a six-pack of beer or something, even though I knew everything was taken care of. I actually ended up at a VC barbecue for Fineo in San Francisco. I knew it was ridiculous. $12 million house, and I showed up with a six-pack of Racer 5 because I couldn't not bring anything. And it engendered, like, a really cool start. And I had a beer with the CEO's son, you know, and it kicked off the party. I think just having that giving mindset.
Something.
Yeah, and it can be intangible.
Right.
It can honestly be keeping your energy level up and bringing positivity. And I, you know, from running groups, that's huge.
Interesting.
You know, just having people come in a good mindset, you know.
So I feel like the mindset's really like a choice right before
mm-hmm.
you walk in. The choice is, am I going to be here or I'm going to be here?
Yeah.
And it's really hard to be in between.
Well, the other part is, I don't think you necessarily have to go in looking to win the event. My joke
mm-hmm.
is always, you look for people who aren't plugged in, you look for people on the wall, and you engage them. They're going to be super appreciative, because it's not in everybody's bag to go to these outgoing social things, but some people really force themselves out there. And if I bring more than like 5 business cards, I feel like I'm kind of doing it wrong. You know, you only have time for so many quality conversations, and you can only really follow up with so many people. You know, it's not a smash and grab.
Yesterday I went through a planning session with someone who I consider to be a master networker.
Yeah.
And he's at the point now, much later in his career, you know, 60 plus years old, really only has time for LinkedIn. It's
mm-hmm.
really hard for him to, you know, he lives kind of far away from the city with his family. It's kind of hard for him to get in the car and drive an hour and go to an event, this and that. And he's really replicated those networking activities on LinkedIn. And the number that we were able to arrive at for him to meet his goal was 10 conversations a week. Mm. Literally 10 qualified conversations mm-hmm. a week is all he needs to generate new business. And so you said 5 business cards, that sort of hit home. You don't need a million conversations. You need a few mm-hmm. quality ones. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree, as long as you're somewhat targeted in the events you're going to, as long as you're traveling in circles that should be similarly aligned. Mm. If you're just knocking doors, you may have to hit 20 to hit 2 businesses that make sense. But if you're going mm-hmm. to an industry event, or if you know the type of circle you're hunting in already, you should be fine. Mm-hmm. You know. And plus, I joke that, you know, Broker Brews or whenever I'm involved, you know, Chambers, it was the LA Chamber before. Locally, mm-hmm. it's been the Newport. They're like hockey assists. You don't look for a deal right away, but you make the allies that are going to help you get into stuff later. Usually it's not directly transactional for the networking circle that you're in right away.
I think it's I like to look for it's very black and white for me. Are you someone who does something, like are you someone who has a bias toward action or a bias toward not action? And it's really black and white if I want to get to know you more, is I prefer the people that like to do and prefer doing. And that's overly simplified. Does that make any sort of sense?
Yeah, we were talking a little ahead of time before we got rolling. Like, you're a creator. You like creating. You like having ideas. You get in the zone of building. You're just finding fellow builders. You're finding people to play the game with, you know? It's like the man in the ring quote. You want other people fighting the fight and kind of enjoy doing it with them. And that's not everybody. I mean, some people, they're going to be more comfortable bunking down on the computer, doing whatever else, and totally good. Like, you need all parts, you know? But you're just looking for co-creators. Yeah.
Interesting. And, you know, also what we were talking about before, you were really hitting it on the head. Do you want to recap that about the different types of people?
We hit a few. Lee and I have known each other for a long time, so it was just like bam, bam, catch up.
you know, Michael Gerber's E-Myth.
Oh, yeah. There are people who find product market fit, there are people who find growth, and then there are people who run companies. And I think I'm in that fit, create category. I've never been a manager, not opposed to it, but I always said I was more of like a lead dog bringing the energy. And you said you're kind of similar in that create and potentially grow. But yeah, neither of us are really chasing down the authority piece of it, you know. More have fun being, you know, I say it humbly, but a little bit more the charismatic lead rather than the boss, you know. So, but we'll see, who knows. We'll become our parents eventually. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I hope I don't become my parents. Yeah. well, actually had a lot of good people who have brought me up and been mentors and things. So I do hope I become like them. What was the next question I had? I was never a very outgoing person. I was actually really shy. And I found that by inviting someone to something that I was hosting, I was able to get out of my shell a lot faster.
No, totally. For me, if I took a personality test when I was like 18, 20, I was like an ambivert, just barely introverted. But I realized it's just beneficial the way our society set up to be outgoing. I saw the upside of my dad as a salesman versus a traditional job. I was looking at nursing at the time. I thought that seemed like the best regular job. And then I saw the money he was making. I forgot about the 20 years to get there, 30 years to get there. But I realized the benefits of being outgoing and making something happen. And then the more I got into the sales world, the more I realized owning something was helpful. And then it's kind of gone full circle because I realized helping a company like Fineo or Maxwell Agency, it can be a lot bigger by contributing to something where you're the right fit than sometimes if you try to be the end all be all or if you're trying to do everything yourself. So it's kind of gone full circle for me right now. Kind of having the ego to pull me out to do my own thing, then realizing the opportunity to attach to stuff that can be bigger than I can do on my own. So that's what I'm sort of in the middle of today.
Very exciting. What's happening in the insurance world?
I have this theory that I know is kind of wrong, but that technology doesn't invent anything. It just layers on top of what's already there. And insurance is behind something as simple as APIs. APIs aren't commonly used. And we're using those for mint.com. We're using those for concert tickets or plane tickets. So insurance is just a fertile space for technological change. So it's really exciting to be a part of that. But I also like working the local agency and literally making cold calls, knocking doors, you know, checking out B&Is.
Taking your medicine.
Yeah. We're trying to see what's meat, you know, not just theory or fluff, you know. So I really enjoy having a foot in both worlds. I helped out at a data visualization startup a couple years ago, and that kind of got my eye on the startup community and just tech. And when I came into insurance, I was like, this is operating like it's 1995, you know. And they were scared.
I see. Yeah. So you were able to take some of what you learned in a tech environment, and then you find yourself in this other environment that maybe hasn't been innovated.
Yeah. And they were scared. They were worried about InsurTech coming. I was like, this is inevitable, and fewer people want to work in the industry. We're going to need tech to be more helpful. I didn't see it as a bad thing. And I didn't have like a system I was defending or upholding, so I could just use whatever tools made sense today. You know, I didn't have to worry about protecting anything. So.
Is that just the way it is? There are some industries that just kind of lag behind?
I think, especially in the States, there's like these nodes of like great schools, you know, money, whatever else. There's modern world, and then there's kind of forgotten world. And literally in a county, you can find the same things, you know. So I just look for opportunities to apply tech where technology hasn't really had an influence yet, and insurance is a great space for it. And the other cool thing about insurance is you get to do societal good, and you can make a good amount of money. I was a youth pastor at one point. Like, I worked with special ed kids. Like, I like doing things that are meaningful. And insurance is pretty cool because, yeah, it's helpful. People need it. Keeps society rolling in. You can make really good money at it. So it's kind of a win-win. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that, you know, a lot of people want to be on the bleeding edge of technology. They want to be doing the coolest, latest thing. And, you know, that, how do I put this? Let those people make the mistakes, take what you said, the meat instead of the fluff, and apply it to a tried and true thing that is built as an infrastructure in the U.S. to literally help people and go from there. I think that also sort of matches Steve Case's, he was the founder of AOL. What he's saying is this third wave is going to be everything from, you know, trains, planes, and automobiles to the old unsexy industries, everything in between that is going to need to come up to where things were 10 years ago, but they are 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just kind
of
rambling.
No, you're on point. To me, I want to buy the third generation of the phone. I don't want to buy the first. You know, to me, technology, I like having it as quasi-disposable. Although, like, I don't want to have too much tech waste. I know it's, you know, not environmentally healthy. I'm an Android guy, PC, throwaway historically. I'm on an Apple now because I've been doing a little bit more creating. But yeah, dude, I want it to be tried and true. Then I want to look for where it isn't. I want to smack it in there. If I can help companies do that, perfect. You know? Yeah. So that's all I'm looking for. And I found a good home in insurance. Yeah.
Another thing you mentioned, I want to learn more about what it was like being a youth pastor.
Yeah.
I think that was interesting.
An accident. I mean, I've had this, for some reason, I've always just been like, sure. I think it's a little brother trait, you know? Cancer scare, like, what? 16 maybe, and end up at church for a little bit. I volunteer for one summer.
Does that mean you potentially had cancer?
I had one, but nothing huge. I think my like 14, 15 year old brain, it was big, or my 16 year old brain. But looking back, if I had the same doctor's appointment today, I'd be like, okay. But ended up at church, ended up being asked to volunteer as a youth pastor for 3 months. Super random, but the youth pastor who I was working under got a job somewhere else. So it turned into 3 months, turned into 6 months, turned into a year, turned into 3 years, but awesome leadership opportunities, public speaking opportunities, just a real soulful experience. And you mentioned running the group drawing you out, I've heard that people aren't naturally charismatic, but they get put in position of leadership and it sort of draws those characteristics out of them. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd be who I am without that experience. It was great. You know, I met some very quality people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a good experience for sure. So.
Interesting that you say that, because I'm now living under the belief that you don't really discover what your gifts are until you try them out, not for yourself, but in service of others.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, it's funny. So Joseph Campbell will talk about the monomyth. It's like any like superhero story, not saying any of us are superheroes, but until like the challenge comes, and still the problem comes, and still the bus almost falls on the people, the powers aren't there. And then like you put yourself in position to have to level up or rise above a circumstance, and you find you can dig a little deeper than you thought, you know.
And, you know, I think the hero's journey is just something that is natural to us all.
Yeah.
Because we think that way. I think it just matches our, the way we think about life and circumstance anyway.
Totally. And you are kind of the hero of your own story. Like, you're in charge of writing it. No one's going to come along and say, hey, here's this perfect thing. You know? You have to go get beat up a little bit and keep showing up and eventually learning. You know? Learn some stuff quicker than others, but, you know.
So, what's your opinion right now on storytelling in startups?
I think that you have to match the objective with how you build the content. Some stuff can be light, surface, quick, totally good. Other stuff can be longer, can be written, even though it's less popular. But if you want to be seen as authority, I think you need to look for the outcome and then build the product to deliver that outcome, or build the narrative, or build the video, build the piece of content to fit what you're looking to produce. But I do think the best art comes from a genuine place, so you have to really suss out what you're working on, who you are as a company. I think people can parse false kind of fluffed up stuff from reality pretty quick.
Hmm.
You know, so if you are going to tell stories about your startup, make sure you really understand your startup and the mission, you know. Kind of going back to your friend who had mentioned, you know, you helped him kind of a little bit of a deep dive recently. Yeah.
Yes. And the interesting thing, and I'm going to add to this part.
Yeah.
I kind of remembered something here. Is not to invent a fake story because you don't feel like you have a story, or that your own real truth story isn't good enough, because that's not true. The truth always is more interesting than the lie. And I think second is, if you really don't feel like you have any stories to tell, share other people's stories as they interact with whatever you're doing, or go out and listen to their stories, record their stories, share their stories, tell their stories, and then you'll learn what a story is.
Well, and our buddy Gary Vee, he's on the bookshelf, the whole document versus create.
Yes.
Just being aware of stuff that may be worth sharing or interesting, and having an eye for content as it appears, rather than trying to make content, because I know content can be challenging. But small, for instance, you know, Maxwell Agency, we're local, we're in downtown LA. You know, Blake's known for being on a bunch of boats. We take a selfie in downtown, man, we're too far from the beach, you know. And
it's
simple.
A story.
Yeah. And candidly, we were just going to an appointment. It wasn't like we're closing a big account, wasn't anything crazy, but we're in the middle of a cool city and we had a moment to be like, hey, we're not in our usual environment, you know. And it's just a quick thing, you know. Somebody asked, I did that webinar earlier today, how much time I spend on social media, but I was like 15 to 30 minutes, not long. And I usually wait till there's something worth talking about.
Absolutely. Document versus create. An example of that is, I made a commitment and have been measuring it, and very specific about the experiment and the measurement here, of doing a daily video and then doing a weekly YouTube, daily LinkedIn. And the results have been phenomenal because I've gotten out of the mentality of like, I need to create something perfect. It's like, no. My metric for success today is, did I get a video out? Is it good? I don't care. Did it go out? The other metric is, did I have, you know, X number of conversations? Did I do this? Did I do that? And I think setting those rules for yourself fights the perfection trap,
mm-hmm.
because you're living a metric based, activity driven thing. You can control the activities. You can't control the outcomes, but you can measure if the activities get to the outcomes, then you can change your activities.
Yeah. Well, I had a really funny insight from a buddy. I was having a little bit of the yips about my Insurance Nerds podcast. He's like, hey man, if three are great, three are decent, and three are bad, you're doing just fine. That's how sitcoms operate. You know, and it's kind of like, all right, fair enough. You know, they all don't need to be Herculean mm-hmm. efforts, you know. And that helped drop the reins off a little bit, you know. So, yeah, it's been fun. And just reps and iteration, you're not going to get it right out the gate. You know, I trust tuning over time and then just not getting, it's not a total curse word, but kind of asked out. Like, if you're playing blackjack or whatever, don't lose all your chips. You know, like, you just can't fail. You can't be out of the game, but just tune up what you're doing as you go and trust you'll get better with practice. Yeah.
It can be hard. Some days I'll put out something and it'll get two or three likes or, you know, a few views or maybe one comment or something. And other days it's like, boom, 60, boom, you're thousands of views,
mm-hmm.
comments, conversation, things are rolling. And it's hard to appreciate those moments, when you're trying to reach that, or if you're not recording
mm-hmm.
it or measuring it. Because you need to look at it over a period of time. Like, how many wins did you get in a month?
Mm-hmm.
And if you got 5 wins in a month, that's awesome.
Well, what about, too? I think there's something to having posts that you don't expect to get a ton of traction or a ton of likes, because I think it keeps, like,
mm-hmm.
the candidness up.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you do, like, a deep dive on something that's going to be a very narrow audience that not a lot of people are going to pay attention to. And I actually think it's kind of a win, too, because... I just don't think we can be chasing like 1,000 likes all the time. I think it starts looking disingenuous. Sometimes you gotta just authentically be out there. Not that the big stuff isn't authentic, but yeah, not every moment's gonna be, you know, sometimes it's just being present, you know.
You said being present, that's
yeah.
really interesting. Is that I've heard a lot, and this came from a barber on who gets his business through LinkedIn.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
He said his goal is to connect with people in his area that, you know, seem to be an executive type crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes sure that he posts every day. He doesn't care if anybody interacts with it. He just wants to make sure he's in their feed every
mm-hmm.
day.
That's cool.
To know that they're there and to remind them that, hey, when you need a haircut, I do haircuts. Eventually, he's not offended if you don't go get a haircut from
yeah.
him today. But he just wants to make sure he lets everybody know that he's available for that haircut.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's engaging the whole person. Executives have to get their haircut, you know. And as long as, like, the content he's putting out there is, like, relevant, entertaining, it's perfect, you know.
I think no matter what you're doing right now, I think LinkedIn is a really,
mm-hmm.
really good place to cut out the riffraff of social media a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an audience of people that I think they want to do something. Anyway.
Yeah, a little more commercial and mature. I got one other funny comment about LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I kind of leaned into it hard even like 5-6 years ago, and I felt like it didn't really deliver at the time.
Mm.
At the time, I felt like it was like an Oklahoma land grab, like this was a whole bunch of real estate, and I just set up shop knowing that it was going to matter.
Mm.
But I feel like last year or two, it started paying dividends. People have taken it more seriously. Younger crowds taking it more seriously. As far as a job platform goes, it's hard to beat. But yeah, it's really had some meat lately and kind of tuned up. I still think Twitter's cool from a niche conversation standpoint and a way to connect with great thought leaders. Mm. And then, yeah, Facebook's more like family and you could have a business page. You know, Instagram's more entertainment with the occasional business splash, unless you're doing business pages. But yeah, Twitter's underappreciated, I think. It's pretty cool for thought leader connections.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and to play on that too, there's been a weird trend of people on LinkedIn using TikTok.
Oh wow!
And I decided I was gonna give TikTok a try, and so I was in here one day doing some writing, and I do a selfie video saying, "Hey, I'm in the office doing some writing. What is everybody else doing?" And you know what the number one comment was after I got a bajillion views?
Well,
homework.
There you go. There you go. There.
That's TikTok. Yeah. You're talking to 12 and 13 year olds. Anyway, I'm going to reserve my opinions.
Well, I'm not there yet. On that webinar I did today, I had like Snapchat and TikTok. Like, I'm 34. I have to be determined.
Right.
I tried Snapchat like twice. Felt like a little old man.
It's one of those things, I think, that is kind of like a land grab. So yeah. I made an account. I put some things up. But after I got that response, I realized I have to be extremely careful because I'm not going to curse. I'm not going to put controversial topics on it. I'm not going to negatively mold the minds of a younger audience like that. It feels unconscionable to me.
No, totally important to know the territory, know what kind of eyeballs can be on it. And I think as a growth guy, as a marketer, you need to know the tools out there. Even if you consciously choose not to use them or know they're not a fit right now, part of your job is to know what tools are, what clubs are in golf bag.
Right.
Yeah. And you may get an account that sells clothes to teen girls and like knowing how to handle TikTok and helps them with their marketing. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Or might sell, scooters to junior highers and high schoolers, So yeah, you totally need to know.
Any closing thoughts as, the whole episode goes on YouTube, and if you feel like we need to edit anything out, just let me know.
Yeah, we're good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna edit out some of those segments for LinkedIn and the 2 to 3 minute mark. Is there anything we talked about that sounded especially interesting that you maybe want to record a really nice sound bite on?
I just want to make sure people know that all this is approachable, that you can do it on a Mac, you can do it with iMovie, you can load it on YouTube, and that I don't like the concept of a brand, but I like the concept of representing yourself well digitally, and I compare it to being well-dressed and decently manicured. I had heard from a friend a while back that people judge you on the way you dress and look to see if you can handle stress, and that's why it's important for business people to be pretty well-organized, even though I am dressed a little bit more in the startup style right now. I think digital is going to be the exact same. I think you can win business digitally, but in a B2B world, it's more about when people are doing their research, making sure you're not losing business. You still might have to go get it. You still might have to make the phone call. You still might have to follow up a few times, but make sure you're putting your best foot forward digitally like you would if you're walking into a job interview. It's my 2 cents. So.
That's really, really good advice. Do you want to do that one more time, but like really specific, because this is like, that's extremely good advice, which is the way I heard it was, whether you're B2C, B2B marketing, B2B, etc., is putting your best foot forward. First impressions matter. Make sure you're not losing business because of your appearance, and that really is the way that you handle that digitally is the way that you appear online. If you could specifically do that again.
Totally. It's funny. Usually I just do everything, just riff one pass. Historically, my dad would always tell me people judge you how you speak, how you write, and how you look. And I think for the past 2,000 years, that's been the case. Now there's also this extra layer of the digital world that we're operating in. And I do think for a year or two more, you can get away with at AOL, personal, Yahoo, email, whatever. Especially if you're in a little bit of older crowd, dealing with folks in an older crowd. But going forward, people are going to do their research very quickly. People are going to do research on their mobile. They're going to make sure your digital imprint looks good. And you want to take care of that the same way historically you would have taken care of, a suit for a job interview. It's like that's your first job interview these days. So it's important to engage your digital persona in a way that merits respect, just like you would your clothes, whatever else. And I just think it's gonna be bigger going forward. It's not the end all be all. You're still gonna have to put in the work, but it's gonna help qualify you for cool opportunities.
Thank you. I've never heard it put so simply, so thank you very much.
We're working on it. So that was the webinar today. It's all we're just learning in real time and sharing. I always joke I'm an insurance guinea pig that can talk, so but yeah, it's been a pleasure, man. And yeah, Lee's always been super helpful and encouraging and just trying to add to the conversation in the neighborhood. And I really appreciate you bringing me on. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Mr. Rogers of Orange County.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Only positive now.
Yeah. Right? Why not?
Thanks, everyone. Have an amazing day.
Thanks for hanging with us.
Good job.
Thanks, sir. Yeah. Hopefully that last little chime at the end is okay. I was like, wait a minute. He's trying to rap.